Welcome to WebACS, Practical Web Accessibility Tips.
WebACS.blogspot.com.
WebACS. Website Accessibility. Web Standards.
Hello and welcome to WebACS podcast number 95, Awareness Day. I have Ross with me.
Hey Dennis, how are you?
Good, thanks. Welcome back, it's been a little while.
Yeah, life gets busy.
Yeah, so today we're going to talk about some miscellaneous things going on and some surveys that have been going around lately about accessibility and some articles of interest and some upcoming events, including the first Global Accessibility Awareness Day, and we'll have a guest or two for that towards the end of the show. So, let's see, first thing, do you want to give us a brief update on, I know you're writing a book, Ross.
Yeah, so those of you who have listened the previous podcast may have heard me talk about it, but I am writing a book. Actually, it's finished. So I think the hard part is over. I finished writing it kind of early October, I think. Maybe even before that, and spent quite a bit of time working with my editor, editing it, and that sort of thing, which is always painful. But ended up, I was originally going to publish with one publisher, and we kind of had different, I guess, visions of the book and what it should and shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm currently looking at other editors, or not editors, other publishers or potentially self-publishing, based on what seems to make most sense.
Well, if they're smart, they'll publish it.
I agree, thank you.
And the title was?
The Six Layers of Design. So it's more of a design-focused book, and I discuss kind of the six key aspects that designs must address in order to be really effective. And it kind of goes well beyond just like looking pretty or even just, you know, being usable and looking pretty. There's, you know, quite a few other layers that are important. There's an entire section called reliability, and that a lot of that has to do with accessibility and people being able to access what you've designed in a reliable fashion. I do have a newsletter that you can sign up for if you go to my blog. Maybe we can add that link. So if you're interested, you can get updates.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Add that link to the notes, and we'll post it to the podcast show notes. So check it out. Last week, I posted a blog on a review I wrote of the disability.gov website, the United States disability.gov site, which was revamped like a month or so ago. I saw a tweet about it and stuff, and checked it out and gave a good review of some things they were doing good and some things that could be improved, and I think it was a pretty good analysis. And I actually, the reason I mention it is because I wanted to say that I got a wonderful response from a system analyst who works on that website. And he really appreciated the review, and he said that the points would be addressed, and hopefully in the next release we'll see most of them taken care of. So that was a big win.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, it seems like, I know in the past when either you or we have done this sort of thing or kind of, you know, brought accessibility issues to people's attentions, it's like either it falls on deaf ears and just nobody responds, or they're just like, well, you know, we have all these reasons why we can't make it accessible. Sorry.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have actually someone say, oh, yeah, good point.
Or ignored.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, because the previous critique I did was just ignored. A developer wrote a blog about kind of like counterpoints to accessibility, And yeah. So he didn't publish my comments, so I published them, and he didn't have any response at all, so. But anyways, yeah, so this email, it was really nice to get that email, and he not only, like, welcomed my input, but he also mentioned, like, Easy Chirp and just my input with the community and everything, so it was, like, one of the nicest emails I ever got. I had to say, yeah. So that was cool.
It was cool. You're making a difference.
I'm trying to. What can I say? And not to gloat too much, but I did have an interview by a PhD candidate in media and cultural studies at the University of Wisconsin, a young lady, Liz Elsesser. She interviewed several people for her research, and so we did an email interview, and I took some time and did a good write-up, and I thought maybe that'd be cool to publish, so she published the interview on her blog, and it's a good read, I think, and so I suggest going to it, although apparently her host company is having a problem, and you may get a malware warning. If you go to that page right now, especially Chrome will display it. I'm not having a problem in Firefox, so I recommend the article, but if you don't go to it, I won't be too disappointed, because I don't want you to risk anything, but I haven't had a problem personally.
Yeah, I can't get to it at all in Chrome. I can get to it in Firefox. It does give me a warning, so I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I wanted to read it, you know, before this podcast, but I was trying to get to it in Chrome. It just didn't work.
Okay. Well, hopefully that'll be removed soon.
I will read it, I promise.
What else is going on? Carl Groves. He's been writing a lot of good blogs. I think I might have mentioned him in the last podcast. But there's kind of been a topic going around about an accessibility body of knowledge that he talked about specifically. And at CSUN 12, I believe that's where he did the announcement of his A11YBuzz.com website. So that's kind of a project he was working on. He got some help with a couple other folks. And it's a great, great reference website. It's kind of basically an accessibility body of knowledge where it has lots of references to different kinds of accessibility, articles and other things on the web. And you could, if you register, you could submit articles to it under all different categories. And it pulls in a Twitter feed and all kinds of stuff. So it's a great new resource from Carl Groves. Thank you.
Yeah, I love the website. My favorite part is it just kind of has this most popular topics section, and it just has so many really cool kind of buckets to look through from, you know, different types of potential accessibility challenges, you know, hearing impaired, mobility impaired, to, you know, disability types and different assistive technologies. So
yeah,
if you're looking to find anything on accessibility, you know, it's a good place to start.
Forms, voice recognition, keyboard accessibility, all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
I've been bad, though. I think I submitted only one thing so far. I got to go in and submit a bunch of stuff.
Add it to the ever-growing to-do list, huh?
Yeah. Actually, I think somebody submitted one of my articles, and it's in the most popular entries. It's the long desk article that I wrote.
Oh, yep, I see that.
Yeah, I think part one and two was submitted, and it was nice to see in the most popular entry list. A11YBuzz.com.
Yep, check it out.
Web ad. All right, I just wanted to mention that there has been an update to the Web Accessibility Toolbar 2012. by the Paciello Group. So it's great to see an accessibility toolbar that's been around and that's still being maintained. Let's see. I'm just looking up the notes here. Yeah, so, I mean, there are a couple minor updates, but still good stuff. More validation services and options added, and then also an option to open the web page in a different browser. So some handy little things. And I believe that's... I think that's for IE and Chrome. I mean, IE and Opera. correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure. What toolbars do you use, Ross?
Very few these days, actually. Pretty much only Firebug, and I still use the Web Developer Toolbar sometimes.
Yeah, but I use those a lot, too.
I've kind of gone to more of a minimalist approach where I don't like a lot of things in my browser, because it just seems, especially with Firefox, it just like gets really slow.
Yeah.
You know, too many things, it like crashes and it's slow. Maybe it's a Mac problem, but...
Yeah, I mostly use the two you mentioned, and then, you know, and then once in a while I'll turn on, like, the Wave 5 or something, and...
Oh, okay, yeah.
Or this WAT toolbar. Not Wave 5, Wave 4, I guess. Toolbar, because Wave 5 is now out by WebAIM, but the toolbar is still being worked on. That was also announced at CSUN. It was pretty cool.
WebAIM.
Okay, so the last thing I just wanted to mention real fast is that it's been pretty cool that I've seen more and more jobs relating to web accessibility lately and being posted on Twitter and other places, so that's great to see.
Right, including your own new job, right?
Yeah, and so my somewhat new job now at PayPal is going pretty well, and I'm using my accessibility skills there, so look out for some big, cool changes coming in the near future.
Excellent. To make online payments accessible for all.
That's right. So, I mean, it's pretty accessible now, but there's just some small little things here and there that are problematic, and just, you know, the design and the architecture is getting pretty old, so that's all being revamped.
Oh, cool. Well, I can't wait to see it. And you're getting to work with some pretty cool, well-known people there, too, it sounds like.
Yeah, the company is focusing on just they're trying to become more of a heavy hitter in the web development world and hiring some really, really good people, getting in some good speakers, and the idea is you know, to try to become a leader rather than a follower. So there's lots of great stuff coming on. And, well, the reason why I mentioned all this is because we do have openings. PayPal is hiring. And so if you're interested, if you know somebody, a solid web developer who hopefully knows something about accessibility, then definitely give me a shout. We're hiring mostly in San Jose, but there's also offices in San Francisco and Austin, Texas. And just basically a solid background. I mean, server side and Java stuff helps, but we're also looking for, you know, strong front end folks with just a good foundation. So if you know someone interested, please contact me. You could always email me. So my daytime email is dlembry@paypal.com.
WebAIM.
Okay, let's move on to surveys.
Yeah, there's quite a few surveys related to accessibility.
Yeah, really? So in addition to jobs, there have been, I've noticed, a lot of surveys going on. The first one by the AFB, if you're a blind or low vision user, you can take this survey on travel website accessibility. So they're trying to gather some knowledge there.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious to see how this one turns out. I hope they... I can't remember if they said they're going to publish the findings or not, but it seems like so many of the travel websites out there are just so reliant on JavaScript. I have to imagine that there's some really big accessibility issues there.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of them are pretty slick, but yeah, they're very JavaScript intensive, and I could see they would be a major problem to work with screen readers.
Right, right.
And Blind Bargains has a short survey to, it says, to improve accessibility to flowcharts and mobile devices. So if you're interested in that, please check that out. I believe you have to log in to do that survey.
Right.
Blind Bargains.
Right. And that one seems interesting, too, because they're talking a lot about automatic image recognition, from what I gather. Just kind of a cool area, maybe reading text within images and being able to parse that out.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really take a good look at it. It says, I guess they're working with the computer science department at North Carolina State University. They're doing some research and development. That sounds cool. And Barrier Break has a survey on books and accessibility. It says if you're a person with a disability or a special educator or parent related to that, then please complete that one. And last but not least, I hear very, very soon, maybe even before this podcast is published, WebAIM is coming out with their fourth screen reader survey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I chatted with Jared Smith just out of the blue. I asked him about it. And he said, yeah, go ahead and mention it. You know, it's coming out very soon. So that's going to be huge. I know the last one was maybe a year and a half ago. And, you know, obviously in this tech and accessibility world, things change fast. And I expect to see numbers for NVDA to rise. And it'll be interesting to see all the other information they come out with.
Yeah, I'm excited about that one.
More good stuff from WebAIM.
Yeah, always have good content.
That's for sure.
WebAIM.
And we've got some articles related to accessibility. And it looks like the first ones, there's a couple on skip links, which is kind of cool. You know, they've been around forever, but there's still different ways you can take a look at them, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I mean, at my day job, I've been working on that as well, and I think skip links is skip to content or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's still kind of a old school practice, but I think it's still important. You know, the technology is still in between supporting ARIA and you know, what about keyboard only users, you know, blah blah blah. So I think it's still a good practice. Maybe not on mobile. If you read the article by iHenny, the first one listed there, it's pretty cool. And she discusses if they're needed, and it has some good thoughts there.
Yeah, and you know, the takeaway I got from that, she did mention the one time that it might be useful to have skip links is, you know, if you have a tablet, you can still have an external keyboard, and in that case, you know, the skip links could be useful. You know, maybe you've got some, you know, motor impairment where, you know, dragging is still difficult. It would still be nice to be able to tab to the first skip link. And, you know, I don't know how many users are using tablets, you know, with external keyboards, but, you know, it's, being aware of those at least is really important, I think, for accessibility, kind of be aware of the different use cases.
Good point. Yeah, iHenny, that's her Twitter handle, but it's Henny Swan, who I did finally meet in person for the first time at CSUN, so that was really cool. Very nice young lady. And a related article, I think this was from the beginning of the year, but this was a great article. It's called Back to Basics, Skip to Main Content Links by Terrell Thompson. And towards the end of the article, he has a fix for skip-to links. Like, some browsers, including Chrome, don't really support a skip-to link. If you do the anchor link and hit enter, and it jumps you down the page, but then if you hit tab, you're still stuck at the top of the page. The tab order doesn't move down with the focus, which is kind of strange. So there's just a little JavaScript fix you can do to make sure all browsers support it the right way. So I've implemented that on EasyChirp, and it was great. And there's some good comments on there too. Jared Smith has a great comment on what they've been doing at WebAIM to solve that problem.
Yeah, that was really cool. And also he gives you some advice, you know, if you hide skip links, how to have them show up on focus. So, you know, if you're using a keyboard, that they still work properly. So it's not just using skip links for, you know, low vision or screen reader users. So, yeah, I mean, for something that's been around for a while, he has some really cool new things to take a look at.
Another solid web accessibility friend.
Yes.
Terrell Thompson, check it out.
Web ads.
What's this article, Mobile Website Debate?
Yeah, you know, I included this. If you haven't come across it, you know, Jacob Nielsen, who's kind of I guess you could say he's like the father of web usability or whatever, recently published his findings where he did a whole bunch of mobile website usability tests. And his basic recommendations were that, if possible, you should have a slimmed-down mobile site and, you know, kind of filter your content based on context, that sort of thing, which people have been recommending or not recommending for a while. And it started this whole debate where another person, Josh Clark, said, well, no, you shouldn't do that. You know, the reason that he brought it, that he said you shouldn't, was interesting to me. And I think has some pretty notable accessibility implications. And there's a couple studies he references where basically he's arguing that a good percent of the population now only or uses mobile as their primary way of accessing websites. I guess there's a study that says, I want to say it's like 10% of the population supposedly only accesses the internet using a mobile device, which means that, you know, how mobile friendly your site is becomes a pretty big accessibility concern. And so he was saying that you should have access to full content, because otherwise you're kind of hurting the site accessibility. I kind of responded in my own way, and thought that, you know, maybe the study seemed a bit skewed, or they asked the wrong questions, or the conclusions were a bit wrong, but it's kind of more of a mobile and how it fits into accessibility seems to be something we need to pay closer and closer attention to, so I thought I'd include that.
Excellent. Yeah, I missed that article by you. I'm going to tweet it right after we're done.
Excellent.
Very cool. Yeah, I saw the first two articles, the Jacob Nielsen and Josh Clark, I did see those going around Twitter. There's a series, Usability Principles, Accessibility Style. And there's three parts to it by Steve Grobschmidt. And that was kind of a neat little blog series to read. So I'm including that. And he talks about the different usability principles and how it can relate to accessibility.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. You know, it's an interesting way to look at usability and how it affects people other than, you know, I guess how accessibility plays into them. And, you know, a lot of it's kind of looking at maybe cognitive issues, where if it's not usable, it can be really confusing if you have a cognitive disability. But he had some other ones as well, so I thought it was really clever.
Yeah, so I'm just to give an idea of some of the items that he's discussing is visibility of system status, match between system and the real world, user control and freedom, help and documentation, aesthetic and minimalistic design. Right on. Yeah, so good stuff.
WebAds.
And then another by Terrell Thompson is a blog that he wrote with the good examples of accessibility websites. So a lot of people, including myself, give critiques, you know, and talk about what can be improved. But he has a nice little list of examples of good accessible websites. A couple U.S. government ones, Canada.ca, and a couple others. And the bad part is, he said he just did like this 10-second assessment using the Wave toolbar and, you know, and the keyboard and Aria were the main things he was looking at. And, you know, he kind of had a tough time finding just some decent, you know, websites that were accessible. So, but it's a good little list. And the design on them is nice and everything. I like this. The CDC one is nice. This Center for Disease Control. Did you happen to take a look at any of those?
Yeah. You know, it's cool that he shows that, you know, nicely designed and accessible aren't mutually exclusive. Because, yeah, I think there's this stigma that accessible websites are, you know, stark plain text or something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the government of Canada, aesthetically pleasing, looks usable, pretty nice. Some of them are a little overwhelming. The Mozilla sites are always nice, so.
Yeah, that's true.
WebAds.
All right, let's move on. We're going to talk about upcoming events.
Yeah, it's good to see that there's still accessibility events going on, and even some pretty big ones, right?
Yeah, so in a few more minutes, we'll have a guest talk about the Global Accessibility Awareness Day. But first, I wanted to mention a few upcoming events. Of course, there's going to be, in the fall, it's more of the accessibility camp or unconference kind of season. But there is one coming up in Seattle on June 2nd and 3rd. It's this year's Accessibility Camp Seattle. Of course, we'll post all these links on the show notes. And before that, May 29th and 30th, is Accessibility Conference at the University of Guelph, Ontario, Canada. So if you're in the area, Toronto metropolitan area, then definitely try to make that. And the NFB National Convention starts on June 30th in Dallas, Texas. So there's some good ones coming up. And I do believe there will be another open web camp this year by John Folio, who's hosted it at Stanford for, I think, 3 years now. But his position is now he's working for Chase in the city, in San Francisco. From what I hear, he's trying to plan another one. And the details, hopefully it'll happen. It's all coming together, hopefully, right now. So stay tuned for that as well.
WebAds.
So next we have a couple guests. Jennison Assumption and Joe Devon will be talking about Global Accessibility Awareness Day. Okay, this is Dennis, and I have Joe Devon and Jennison Assumption on the line. Hello, guys.
Hello, Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
Glad you could join me. We are going to talk about the first ever Global Accessibility Awareness Day. So thanks to you guys for coordinating this big effort. Can you tell us what Global Accessibility Awareness Day is?
Well, basically, the idea is that developers and also UX, UI people often don't know what kind of issues come up for people that use accessibility devices to surf the web. So before they can like be focused on making really good websites for it, they kind of have to know what the problem is. So basically, I just put a blog post together and suggested to make an awareness day. So that's where the name came in. And then Jennison, I basically thought that everybody would ignore it because I put it on my blog, which everybody usually ignores. And somehow Jennison saw it, and he transformed it into this global event, and it's just mind-blowing, and introduced me to about 20,000 people.
I think for the benefit of the listeners, Joe, why don't you just talk a little bit about who you are?
Okay, I basically don't know anything about accessibility myself. I've basically been freelancing for quite some time. Did a lot of work here in Los Angeles for Fox, AmericanIdol.com, and sites like that. And I had seen this video by Victor Tsaras. Did I pronounce
Saren.
It right?
Saren, yeah.
Yeah. From Yahoo. This was quite some time ago, where he had this video just showing what it was like using JAWS, and it just blew me away. And it really made me realize there was some kind of issue. And then it kind of came back again when I saw my dad, like, trying to deal with banks. And I customized his browser so that he had the colors that would work for him. He doesn't hear that well. He doesn't see that well. And it's just impossible. These banks, I mean, you have to be able to deal with your bank to do anything. And it's just impossible.
That's a good point. Yeah, sorry, I forgot to do intros, so thanks for giving us a little background, Joe. And Jennison, most of us know who you are now. You've been on the show a few times, but do you want to give a little plug for yourself?
Yeah, sure. So Joe's in Los Angeles. I work out of Toronto. But interestingly enough, I found out later that Joe's actually a Canadian expat living in Los Angeles. So that's kind of cool. But
go Habs, go!
So I work in accessibility. I've been working in the field for over 10 years, and outside of my day job, I spend time using social media and things like that to connect with people like Joe, to kind of make accessibility more accessible to mainstream developers and designers and all that. And just to get back to how I met Joe, so it was one of these things where, you know, I actually was home on a Saturday evening, and I got onto Twitter and saw a tweet that Joe had tweeted about his blog post and about how developers need to know more about accessibility. So I clicked the link and read the blog post, and I immediately, for better or for worse, for Joe's perspective, I immediately jumped on it because he was talking about awareness building. And all that, and some of your the listeners to WebEx might know that I'm heavily involved in the accessibility camp and on conference movement, which has a similar thing. So when Joe was talking about making it global, one of the discussions we have in the accessibility community is we have this tendency to preach to the converted or to just talk within ourselves. So I thought that this would be an amazing opportunity to try and reach out to the unconverted. And to work with this one day and just have a bunch of events happen. And I know we'll get into that, but
it's a great idea. So it's May 9th, and
correct.
A while back I did see, and that's soon after this podcast will be published, a while back I did see some tweets going around about, hey, what day, you know, can we make it? So is there anything that went into that decision?
I picked it out of the hat, and nobody objected, so we went with it.
Didn't clash with anything else, hopefully.
Well, sooner or later, you know, everything clashes, but, you know, you kind of have to just pick a date and do it. I knew I didn't have enough time to make it happen, and I guess Jennison did too, and we said, well, just pick a date, and it'll have to happen.
Yeah.
And that's the truth, because I had a lot of ideas, Jennison had a lot of ideas. We really wanted to, like, access the media and try and push this in the media, try and reach out to meetup organizers in many different cities. But both of us were so swamped the last few months, we didn't get all of it done. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's unbelievable what's already happening. It's beyond what I could have dreamed of.
That's awesome.
to mention it a little bit.
And
yeah,
I know
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know you guys are working on the website right now, but you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/Global Accessibility Awareness Day, and get information there.
Correct. And if you want a more, if you're looking for another version of that, the mobile site also supports it. So that would be m.facebook.com/Global Accessibility Awareness Day as well.
But maybe is that going to be the domain too?
GlobalAccessibilityAwarenessDay.org is going to be the domain.
Sweet.
But I think for the purposes of this podcast, I'd encourage folks to check the Facebook page, because that's where we would announce once the website goes live. So all of those posts in there, and you can look at them even though you're not a member of Facebook. And we also have a Twitter feed, which is at GBLA11YDay. And the hashtag is the number sign GAAD. So those are the ways to get a hold of us that way. I do have an email address. I'll give it at the end. But I'm wondering, probably for the interest of time, if we wanted to talk briefly about the events. And Joe, because this is like Los Angeles is where Joe is, and Joe kind of underplayed himself. He's very well connected into the development community, and he's a real networker and is just connected in with the design and usability community as well. But Joe, maybe you wanted to talk about the signature event for Global Accessibility Awareness Day in LA on May 9th.
Yeah, so we've got, first of all, we've got a bunch of different meetups linking up to it, but the two biggest sites that are the two biggest meetups putting it together is the Los Angeles UPA group and the LAPHP group, and basically we're probably expecting, I guess, around 200 people, give or take, and we're going to have Todd Klutz flying in, as well as Victor Tsarin, if I pronounced it right.
Yeah, you got it.
And we also have Zahir Hertz is also going to give like a brief presentation. He's a friend of mine from Fox, who's an awesome programmer. And, we're just really excited over here. It's going to be a great night.
And we want to thank Yahoo for donating, not only sending Todd and Victor. So Todd and Victor work on the accessibility team at Yahoo, and they're being flown to Los Angeles. And the event is being hosted at Yahoo, correct, Joe?
Yes, they're hosting the event, they're sponsoring the food, they're bringing in the speakers, and I got to say that they're amazing. I mean, they have been so helpful and supportive of this from the very get-go. Most people that I've spoken to that are not already in the accessibility community tend kind of to be like, not that excited about it, to be perfectly honest, but Yahoo has been really great. So really, kudos to them.
That's awesome. So what other events we got going on, Jonathan?
Sure. So I'm going to be running a more modest event in Toronto. The folks at the Inclusive Design Research Center at OCAD University in Toronto was good enough to donate some space for me. And I will be running a session. It's essentially on the experience of a screen reader users on the web. So I'll be doing a demo and talk using NVDA, which is non-visual desktop access.
Yes.
God, I hope I got that right. It's an amazing open source screen reader. And the reason I'm deliberately using that one is because then folks can actually go home and download it and use it. So I'm going to do that. And then immediately after that event, not to be outdone by Los Angeles, we're going to grab whoever's there and go to a local watering hole and actually talk about regular Accessibility Toronto meetups. So this will actually be the first meetup for accessibility folk in Toronto, but it will be the foundation meeting. So we'll talk about setting a set of meetings, whatever, monthly or quarterly on that. So that's what's happening in Toronto. And again, for both events, if you go to the Facebook page, you can see the links there to register. But we'll get those for you, Dennis, for the show notes.
Okay.
But then very briefly, if I could talk about the other events that are confirmed. So there's a couple events that are still in the almost confirmed stage, but we'll focus on in Melbourne, Australia, the Melbourne Web Accessibility and Inclusive Design Meetup Group has actually timed their breakfast meeting for May 9th and Global Accessibility Awareness Day. So thanks very much, Adam, and I'm going to mispronounce your name, Adam, I'm sorry, but I think it's Sifsiaglu. That's what Jaws says anyway. But that's what's going to happen in Melbourne, Australia, so that's great. So they're going to get together for their breakfast meeting and talk about stuff that they're doing and just talk generally about accessibility. And the other confirmed event is in Mumbai, India. So hats off to Shilpi Kapoor, who just, I emailed her at the last week saying, I've got this crazy idea for you. She's with Barrier Break Technologies, technology out in Mumbai, and she's partnered with NASCOM and the NASCOM Foundation, and they're working the state of Maharashtra, where Mumbai is, has just, I think, rolled out accessibility standards for the web. So they're leveraging that to do a semi-governmental, almost a day-long event. So that's a big deal, and we're really thankful to Shilpi for just running with that. And so there's going to be a day-long event, and part of that will be a two-hour training session for designers and developers to learn stuff. So that's the Mumbai event, the Melbourne event, and then we talked about Toronto and Montreal. We also have right now a confirmed virtual event. So, you know, we're only able to get a couple of cities in this time around just because of timing and such. But there will also be a virtual event. Chris Dobson, who works at the Center for Innovative Instruction, at Harper College in, I believe it's pronounced Palatine, Illinois. He's going to be delivering online a session directed at folks working in higher ed. And it's going to be talking about different webinars and resources for making technology more accessible. So that, again, that's going to be really focused for folks working at colleges and universities. In IT. So we'll have information, obviously, on the website. Both Toronto and Montreal have Toronto and the virtual event have space limitations. Toronto, we can only hold about 22 folks, and the virtual event has space for about 30. So it's going to be, we want people to RSVP for those events so we can manage headcount. I know, Joe, your event at the Yahoo space can hold about 200, and I know for Mumbai, they need to get about 150, or would like to get 150 folks, and I know for Adam and the breakfast meeting, I think they've got a good crew for that. So that's what we have confirmed. Now, unconfirmed, but I've been allowed by the lawyers to leak out a little bit, is that Derek Featherstone of Simply Accessible, a lot of people know Derek as a pretty well-known guy on accessibility, HTML5, and mobile accessibility, all that good stuff. He's plotting to do something for Global Accessibility Awareness Day, so stay tuned on Twitter and Facebook and on our soon-to-be-launched website. He'll be doing something good. That's all I can say, if that all happens. And what I want to say is, I just really want to thank, and I think Joe will agree with me, that people have just been so generous, because we've asked people really at the 11th hour, because Joe and I are, this is kind of, we've got day jobs, night jobs, and other jobs, kind of in quotes, and this is kind of a labor of love for both of us. Joe, I hope I'm speaking correctly for you, too.
Oh, yeah. The people that have helped have been amazing.
Yeah. It's just, you know, between Joe and myself, Joe's you know, fairly connected in the mainstream dev community, and I'm fairly well connected in the accessibility community, and we're just like reaching out to different people who we know who wouldn't like hang up the phone, if you will, because we both know a lot of people, but some people may just kind of jaw drop if we said, you have like a week or 2 weeks, can you put something together? But people have been amazing. So I want to really acknowledge all the folks who've really stepped up to this. And this is our first year. We're going to get better at this as the years go forward. For one thing, for example, we don't have an official logo. I know some people have been asking about that. I didn't know, so for those of you who don't know, I'm a screen reader user. So Dennis just told me before the podcast that there's a, on the Facebook page anyway, there's just a big question mark. But Joe, you had a good point about the question mark. Do you remember?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was kind of just joking around, like, well, where's the accessibility on some of the sites here? That's our question mark, you know.
But if we, I mean, if we can put something together, we'll throw something up. But it really is.
Trust me, you know, I will not be able to come up with something better than the question mark. You know?
And you don't want a blind person to be coming up with a logo either.
Okay, fair enough. You beat me on that one. Okay.
Well, you guys got all kinds of stuff going on. That's awesome. Events all around the world, and of course, we'll be putting all this information and links on the show notes. And one more time, it's Facebook.
What's that? I just want to add a couple of things before you finish up with us. Do we have time?
Real fast.
Okay. So one was that even if you're not in a city that has a meetup, there's a couple of things that you can do to still participate. So one of them is if you know of a meetup that is running that day, encourage them to just give like 10 minutes to surf to a website or ask people in the audience what their websites are and surf it with the mouse unplugged so that you get a feel for what it is that you need to do to make the site accessible. And the other thing I wanted to mention is just that we're getting the semantic web community involved in this as well, because whatever is good for the semantic web is good for the accessibility community and vice versa, because if you have data and it's marked up semantically, it's something that machines can understand, including screen readers. So those are just the two things I wanted to add.
Good
and
points.
Even if you're not at a meetup, you can also unplug, check your own site with it, and just unplug it and fix it.
Right, and really quickly, sorry, Dennis, I know you're running quick on time, but Joe, you're right. There are a couple of virtual activities that we're going to be promoting on the day. To Joe's point, we are going to be encouraging everyone through social media and elsewhere to unplug their mouse for an hour and or turn off their screen for an hour and or use their accessibility features on their smartphones and just surf to either, like Joe said, if you're a developer or designer, to a site you've created, or if you're not, go to some of your favorite websites. Go to try and use some of your favorite social media sites or shopping sites or whatnot. And then we're going to have space on a blog for you to actually blog your experiences. If you want to blog on your own blog, that's great, but we'll have space on a blog. And again, we'll provide all of that on the days leading up to the event, and certainly that day there'll be information out like where you can blog and get involved in this, because we do want to make sure everyone can participate, whether you can attend a public event or the virtual event. But if you can't, these immersive activities will really give the design and developer community a chance to experience different accessibility needs. So we're really excited about that part.
Yeah, those are great ideas, guys. So, yeah, one more time, the website is facebook.com/globalaccessibilityawarenessday, or on Twitter, hashtag GAAD, and the Twitter handle is GBLA11YDAY.
Right. So if you would like to get in touch with us by email, our email address is all one word, global, A11Y, awarenessday@gmail.com. Again, global, A11Y, awarenessday@gmail.com. Especially if you're planning, if you're listening to this and you at the last minute are planning to do an activity or have questions or anything like that, that's our non-social media way of getting in touch with us.
Awesome. And once again, it's May 9th, so look at your calendar and participate. Well, thanks very much, guys, for coming on.
Hey, thanks for your interest.
A ton of great information, of course. My pleasure to include this in the podcast. And we will speak to you soon. Thanks again.
Take care.
Find the WebEx podcast and blog at webex.blogspot.com. That's WebEx.blogspot.com.